Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour, hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for our show, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. All across the country, there are organizations that work to improve the lives of children and youth and families. And clearly, these folks benefit from the work of these organizations. But the communities where they're located also benefit, and that happens in ways that maybe aren't always obvious. In this part of the show, we'll be trying to talk a little bit about some of the hidden value of community organizations and also talk about the demand for the kind of services that they provide and how they're doing in trying to meet that. And we have with us three guests this morning, who all approach these and questions in slightly different ways. Lynn Jones is the president and CEO of United Way of Champaign County. She's done a lot of volunteer work in our area. She's been president of the Executive Club of Champaign County and the Champaign County Literacy Council. She's also past board member of the Crisis Nursery and the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Brenda Kester is coordinator of the Family Resiliency Center here at the U of I, where she supports the research and outreach mission of the center in a variety of roles. Before that, she worked for a number of years in both the Champaign and Urbana schools. She has served on the board of directors of several community organizations, including the Crisis Nursery and the Junior League of Champaign County. And also here with us is Dale Morrissey. This year, he's celebrating his 30th anniversary at the Developmental Services Center. He's been the chief executive officer there for the past 22 years. And during that time, this organization has grown from serving 300 people every year to now serving over 1,400 this past year. So I'm glad that the three of them could all be here and talk with us. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. So at any point here, people are certainly welcome to call in, make comments, ask questions. The only thing we ask of callers is people just try to be brief so we can keep going, get in as many people as possible. But certainly, callers are welcome. Again, you're in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here, all three of you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Here's where I think I'd like to start, and perhaps I would turn to first to Brenda Kester. Am I pronouncing your name correctly,
Brenda? Kester,
okay,
that's right.
I want to make sure. And that is to talk a little bit about this idea that we really started with wanting to talk about, and that is this idea that organizations like the Developmental Services Center and all of the others that come under the United Way umbrella, they have specific people that they're trying to serve, okay. and they're target clients. But if you ask this question, well, can you say that the community benefits beyond that? How do you even think about that? Is that something you can even measure?
Well, there's a whole area of economics and science that attempts to look at those things, and a lot of it is the way in which you define that. How do you define community? Do you find it just as the population that you serve, as when Dale's doing? Is it just that direct population, or is it the greater population? Is it a geographical area? Is it a greater society definition? Mm-hmm. And then what are those benefits that you're seeking to track? Because it can be just the very simple services, say, for instance, the DSC provides to their clients, but it could also be that there's some other benefits that the community receives that were unintended, that were positive things. So yeah, it's all a matter of how you're defining and what you're looking at.
Well, I'm sure that's the kind of thing that social scientists could spend a lot of time doing and writing research papers on and so forth. I think, though, that I'm sure it's also something that helps, that would help anybody that was in this sort of business make the argument that we're doing something good.
Right.
Saying we're not only we doing something good for the people we immediately serve, but we're doing something good in a larger sense. And it probably doesn't hurt to have something you can pull out of your pocket and say, here, look at this. I got this study that says for every dollar that's invested here, the community actually benefits, $1.50 or $1.25 or something like that. And there are attempts to do just that. If we just said, okay, let's say Champaign County. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, we got United Way of Champaign County, an organization based here in Champaign. Can you actually nail down in some sort of a way what the benefit is that we're talking about?
That's a complicated answer. Let me give you just a slightly different response. Mm-hmm. When I worked to help coordinate a mentoring program in the Champaign that was in the Champaign-Urbana schools, we talked to our staff a lot about what were some of the benefits and outcomes do you think that we're going to see. One of the things that we tracked was simply the opinion that adults coming into the schools had. Did they have a greater understanding of the challenges that children faced? Did they have a greater understanding of the challenges that schools faced? And in fact, we found that 98% of volunteers and mentors coming into the school had a better understanding of how difficult it was for schools and how difficult it was for children. So when a tax referendum comes around, does that help? When voters now have a greater understanding of some of the things that schools are, that was certainly never one of the intended benefits of a mentoring program. Yeah. But in fact, it was something that we saw that, but it was only because we started tracking and talking about it.
Well, that's interesting because that's a more subtle example. I guess I was thinking about the kind of thing people make this argument that if you say like the Boys and Girls Club, you know, if you have a program that's designed to provide constructive activities for young people, right, keeps them from getting into trouble. They don't get into trouble, then that means less resources expended on law enforcement and the judicial system and all the things that we do to trying to repair damage that we maybe could have headed off in the first place by doing something good for them. So, and that I'm sure that's, you know, you make that kind of argument, but this is even a more interesting and sort of subtle thing, the kind of example that you cited.
Right. I mean, there's social scientists don't have a complete agreement on the actual costs. When you say, for instance, you're going to invest X amount of dollars into a preschool child's education, what are some of the long-term benefits we might get? And the science isn't 100% in agreement about what those figures are. They're in agreement that it would help us if we do a little more research to identify those actual dollars. Those are kind of called shadow prices. So things you can't really have, you know, put a number on. Some things you can. You can say what it costs to incarcerate someone this year, and you can predict that possibly by not, you know, like putting this child in a better educational setting or giving them better opportunities, you might keep them from having those costs in the future. But
Well, let me turn to Lynn Jones. I'm just interested in what you think about this whole discussion and whether, in fact, that does making that kind of argument, you know, the wider community benefits argument, does that help for somebody like you who's hoping to encourage people to make contributions to these kind of organizations or sort of to the larger cause?
Well, you know, I think for a long, long time, United Way has talked about the community impact that the organizations that we fund provide. And, you know, in terms of specific numbers, and I won't vouch for the scientific validity, but I know that on a number of occasions I've heard Andre Arrington from the Boys and Girls Club talk about the fact that it costs $523 a year for a young person to be involved with the Boys and Girls Club and have an after-school program that provides homework assistance and leadership training. And it costs about $14,000 or $15,000 a year for a young person to be in the juvenile detention center. To me, part of the question is, what is the cost of not providing these services? Because you were correct in the beginning. The reality is, if people do not receive services, there certainly are drains on other parts of the community. If the Eastern Illinois Food Bank did not provide food for all of the pantries and the group meal programs, I'm guessing that when you read in the newspaper that the township assistance office is bombarded with requests, you could multiply that times 10. Because if that food assistance wasn't available, through the food bank, you would probably see people looking in other places.
Yeah. In fact, Lynn, I spoke with Jim Hires, the director of the food bank, just trying to get some information for this program. Mm-hmm. And an example of that, to put it in dollars and cents, is through their distribution as a not-for-profit and doing it as a consortium, they can provide food to organizations that then can distribute that for 13 cents a pound. And their cost estimates that they've got from their national organizations, that if you would go out and purchase that, it would average $1.58 a pound. So there's truly a 92% savings doing it through a food bank versus if each organization would try to go out and do that group purchasing themselves.
Yeah. Well, do you think that those people who are likely to make a contribution, say, a contribution to United Way or to the Developmental Services Center or some kind of organization, or some either some umbrella organization or some very specific one. I mean, do you have to actually make that argument, or do the if people are already in the mind frame to contribute, they would say, oh, yeah, of course, I already understand that. You don't have to convince me of the benefit. I understand the benefit. That's why I'm here writing you this check.
Sure. Well, I certainly think that we're very responsible to always make a case, if you will, for why contributing to a not-for-profit is a good thing to do. In the case of United Way, a little unlike some of the agencies that we fund, we do a lot of workplace campaigns. So often employees could be hearing for the first time about community impact and what the organizations that we fund are able to do. And we also really try to let people know that, that the amount that they're giving can accomplish specific things.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a sense we're always trying to explain community impact and why it's a good investment to get on board. But I also think that our agencies absolutely have the kinds of results that we can take out to the public and say, this is what this organization can do with this amount of money. I think that in today's economy, and I've said this more than once, we're a good investment.
Yeah. Let me just very quickly introduce the three guests again. So people, if you've just tuned in, you know who it is that you're listening to. Lynn Jones is the last person you heard. She's the president, CEO of United Way of Champaign County. Brenda Kester is coordinator of programs at the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois. And Dale Morrissey is the CEO of the Developmental Services Center in Champaign. We're talking about community organizations and what they do for communities. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800 222-9455. I want to ask Dale to, because there are some people who might not know what the Developmental Services Center is and what it is that you do, and take a minute or two to talk about the DSA.
It'd be pretty tough to do in a minute or two, but I'll do my best.
Well, you don't have to take only 2 minutes.
No, I really do want to be brief because I want to respond a little bit to what
sure.
Lynn said too.
Sure.
DSC is a comprehensive, it's actually probably the largest not-for-profit in the community as far as social service goes. We provide services to children and adults with what's called developmental delays and developmental disabilities. And we primarily serve kids between the ages 0 and 5 and then adults from 15, 16 on up, providing a variety of services. In our children's programs, we provide therapies such as speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy. Our generalist, or actually I'd call it more of a specialist, is the child development specialist, which has a little bit of expertise in all those areas that goes in and works with the family to help them work with their child to become as independent as they possibly can be.
Mm.
On the adult side, in supporting, again, those individuals, we have work programs, work training programs, vocational programs, residential services, both group homes, independent apartment training, supported apartment services, case management, respite. We have some individuals that are very, very challenged and have multiple disabilities. Probably 200 of the people that we serve, if we weren't there 25 years ago, they would have been in institutional care. On a yearly basis, we serve about 950 kids. and about 450 adults. And again, some from very severe to some people that just with a little bit of support can become as independent as they can.
Mm-hmm. And what are your sources of funding?
We're multiple. We have about 45% of our funding. We have an operating budget of about $12 million. We have about 45% of that comes from the state of Illinois, that we earn most of that on a fee-for-service basis. So if we're supporting a person in one of our group homes that evening, we get paid for it. If there's no one there, you don't. We have some local funding through the Champaign County Mental Health Board and Champaign County Developmental Disability Boards, which is property tax. We have our support, of course, through United Way into both our vocational programs, our apartment services program, and our children's programs. We actually earn about $1.5 million of our dollars through the work programs that we operate to train our people with disabilities. It's a real interesting challenge. We provide real work for about 250 to 300 people in our programs each day that we go out, we bid on work for local companies that we provide work at a competitive price. We tell them we're going to give them a quality product and we're going to meet their time frame. So it's just because we serve people who have mental retardation and cerebral palsy, epilepsy, and all different kinds of challenges, we still operate this as a business. It's very, very important that we meet those challenges.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of goes back to David, to my point. I really believe that we owe it to all people to show how cost efficient and effective we are, whether it's the donor dollar, whether it's the taxpayer, because as I said, I get state dollars, I get local property dollars, and just the general public, because when you hear taxes, how's my money being used? How can I show that there's going to be a return on investment? How can I show that in that children's program that if we're effective on, let's just pick a number, if out of 950 kids, if out of one of every 20 was going to need a full-time aide as they go through the school system, if we're just effective enough in those first 3 years so they only need a half-time aide for that 18 years, we more than pay for all the services we do at DSE. Yeah. That $12 million is paid for just in the school systems alone.
Well, and I'm sure that, and rightly so, that organizations like DSE and others, if you're getting public money or you're soliciting private contributions, you've got to show people what it is you're doing with the money and demonstrate that you're using it effectively, or else that's, you know, you're not going to be able to continue. I guess one of the things that I wonder about is whether sometimes maybe organizations, they're not lucky enough to have such an effective spokesperson. You know, they are having they sometimes have a hard time making the case for themselves. Talk about what it is that they're doing and why it is that needs support.
Well, that's one of the challenges. It takes time and money and expertise to do any sort of cost-benefit analysis. One of the great things about being affiliated with something like United Way is they can provide some of that assistance. We're lucky in this community to have the university. There's several different departments that'll help do some program evaluation for programs. But it takes, to get Dale's experience and expertise in being able to both articulate the story and the numbers. And I think that's one of the things that both Lynn and Dale do very, very well, is they can tell you about the numbers and the clients that are served and the money that's saved, but they can also tell you the stories about the individuals, because sometimes numbers get a little lost and a little overwhelming. I mean, $12 million seems like a little bit to some people and a whole lot to others. So you have to put it in context, and I know you have lots of great stories, Dale, about some of the individuals and families that you've helped and impacted. So being able to put those two things together.
David, we're also Len and I spent a lot of time, particularly in the last couple of years since she's been in her new capacity here, of trying to say this community is very important. What happens at Prairie Center affects Developmental Services Center. What happens at the Mental Health Center affects DSE. If people who have mental health issues that can benefit by our vocational training programs or vice versa, or oftentimes we put people in a box because they're one. Many people, like all of us, have different issues and we need different levels of supports. And so if something goes down, we're all impacted. When we lose a local child care center, it affects DSE. It affects all of our employees. And so I think we owe those larger organizations, we owe it to support the smaller organizations. And by the way, some of the smaller organizations have great advocates also that can really articulate their needs. But we all are, the community is very, very important. I think we all have our own priorities. I think the donors and the people to support have priorities, but it really is impacted. If one piece of the system goes, it affects all of us.
Mm. Absolutely. I remember a discussion we had in an executive director's meeting one day when we were discussing all of the cuts and the lack of reimbursement from the state of Illinois. And Gigi Lambert, who runs CASA, said, you know, if Prairie Center loses money and there are not daytime programs for people with addictions, sadly, we could anticipate that we will have more children in the system. Yeah. And there really is that sort of domino effect. Many individuals and families who need some assistance get that from more than one organization.
Yeah.
And so Dale's absolutely right. I think we're all pretty interdependent on each other. We've already mentioned the food bank, and the food bank serves, I don't know, I think 40-some organizations that we provide funding, that receive funding from other places. But there really is a connect. But I think the other thing that is really important to emphasize is truly what is the cost of not having service available. And you think about what happens. I mean, we know already that there are not enough spaces in the homeless shelters as there are homeless people in the county. So there are people on the street, but how many more would be if there were not shelters available?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for lots and lots of issues, homelessness, addiction issues, part of the cost is that if services are not available, and I think I can say this with confidence, a whole lot of people who need help are going to show up at the local emergency rooms. And that's going to cause and has a significant increase in medical costs.
Hmm. This is maybe stepping back from that kind of a technical question, but I guess I'm going back to this question about how it is that that organizations try to determine, you know, try to look at what they're doing, how effective they are. Are they using their resources well? All those sorts of things that might really take somebody who has a little bit of special training expertise in that, you know, somebody like Brenda, for example, maybe, or somebody who does that kind of thing. Does United Way, is that something that you try to do for the organizations that are under your umbrella?
Well, there's a pretty involved process. Dale might even want to complain about it. But any organization, 501c3, that receives United Way funding, we're on a 2-year funding cycle, and there's a pretty detailed application process that includes outcomes and how those outcomes are going to be measured. There's an audit that every organization we fund has to provide, and we go over that pretty carefully to make sure that the organizations that we're funding are financially viable. And so, yes, we certainly do try to help our agencies. In fact, this year we had a great workshop that Wynn Core, who's the dean of the School of Social Work here, did for us and talked to all of the agency directors about, you know, how to put their requests in outcomes, how you evaluate an outcome so that we can really look at what does the agency say that they're going to do in this program and how are they going to measure whether that has happened.
Yeah. I think here this is a good point, something that I think people who don't work in nonprofits maybe don't appreciate, the fact that in order to get grants, the process that you have to go through is very complicated. It involves filling out a zillion forms and
small rainforest,
providing them with all kinds of information. And if everything isn't done exactly right, it's not going to go. And so it's something that has to be done very carefully, and that organizations that are getting these funding are expected to account for it and to make sure that it's used effectively. And it's not just a matter of somebody handing out money. It is indeed a difficult and complicated process And involves a lot of time spent for people to make sure that everything is in place.
Well, and I should add, it's not just a lot of time spent, but the decisions are not made by the staff. Right now we have almost 80 volunteers who are doing site reviews and making funding recommendations. So this is not where, you know, three or four of us sit in a room and say, yeah, we like Dale, we're gonna give him his money this year, and we don't quite understand this program, so maybe we won't. I mean, we have teams of people who are going out and they are visiting and talking to directors of every single program application mm-hmm. that is in, and they make recommendations back to our community impact committee. So it is a very involved process, but it involves the very people who are investing in United Way and our agencies.
Well, I think one of the great things about what United Way does, it's, I hate talking about financial markets right now or investment, but it's just painful to think of. But sometimes people will invest in a money market because they're trusting that that advisor has done that research on the various stocks instead of going out and just purchasing and doing all that research yourself in individual stocks. You'll put your money in a money market because your financial advisor is doing that for you. United Way is a little bit like that in the sense of the community investment advisor, and they're doing that hard work and that homework about what agencies are doing well and providing. They're not all big ones. There's some smaller ones as well. So if you're donating and giving money, you should be asking those questions. And not everyone has the time to delve in as deeply as United Way has been able to do. Mm-hmm.
Yes, David. It's a really complicated process. So I think the other thing is, you know, we talk about big and large. For example, DSC is one of the largest, but we have waiting lists for nearly every program and service. Our children's the only one that we've not made the exception. We refuse to not enter a person at child at this time because, we know the impact. I can toss you out figures like for every dollar invested, you save us $7 in the future. But there are significant impacts that we know that child. What we learn in that first 5 years, you know, can't make up. But the point I wanted to make on this funding is that we're all in this together, but we're also competing for scarce dollars. Mm-hmm. One of the most difficult things I have as CEO working with my board of directors is who gets served and who doesn't. Mm-hmm. What is that priority on limited resources? Because the one thing, if you don't run it as a good business, you know, not-for-profit means we just don't pay taxes and you can donate dollars and get some help with that. But the fact is we've got to be well-run businesses to prove that we can be cost-effective and provide the most services we can to the most people. And so that's a real challenge. And you're right. We have diversification in funding at DSC, which is good. Many organizations like mine are 88 to 90% funded by the state of Illinois. And as I said, ours is only 45% funded by the state. And so diversification is important, particularly when the state of Illinois is 51st out of 50 states in the District of Columbia, and their support for people with developmental disabilities, you need to make sure you're diversifying.
Yeah. We're a little bit past our midpoint. Just real quick, again, for anybody who might have tuned in, I want to go around and introduce the guests. Dale Morrissey is now celebrating his 30th year at the Developmental Services Center, has been chief executive officer for the past 22 years, and certainly the organization has grown significantly during that time, and it is now the biggest, we said, in terms of budget, I guess it would be the biggest nonprofit service organization.
Local hospitals are really large.
Oh, okay.
But when you talk social services, I'm not as big as Carl or anything. But yeah, okay. Actually, mental health centers very close. Prairie Center's right behind, but we're, I think, the largest.
What among the biggest organizations of this type here in Champaign County? Brent Kester is coordinator of the Family Resiliency Center at the University of Illinois, and Lynn Jones is president and CEO of United Way of Champaign County. We're trying to talk some about the contributions that organizations like United Way and the Developmental Services Center and others make to communities. And whether, in fact, you can try to put a number on that, and certainly people in the social sciences do try to do that. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, Dale was just touching on something, and it's certainly something that I wanted to talk about, and that is, given where we are now, economically speaking, mm-hmm. with the difficulty of that everybody's facing, how organizations like Dale's or all the various organizations that are under the United Way umbrella, how are people doing, and particularly how are they coping with both the fact that, you know, if they're dependent on state money. Who knows when the money's going to come? Yeah. And then for people who are making charitable contributions, you know, maybe people don't have as much money, so they're not able to give as much. What does that mean for the kind of organizations that come under your umbrella at United
Well,
Way?
Well, I think we'll let Dale talk a little bit about what happens when the state of Illinois money doesn't come, because he's really been pulling together a lot of information in that regard. And we do know, we have some composite information of all of our agencies mm-hmm. that I can share. But, you know, on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, what did,
Well, there's two things that you're really talking about. Are you going to get cut? Is one, mm-hmm. and getting paid, as you said, when it comes from the state of Illinois is very critical. Mm-hmm. Cuts are important. DSC, for example, right now has suffered about $100,000 in cuts this past year, and that's bad. That's really difficult. But at least with a cut, if you know soon enough, you can try to plan for that, reduce services appropriately to stay in business. And it's very devastating, and we're really concerned with the state's economy. And so are many, many organizations, small and big,
yes.
of what's going to be there. Are they going to cross the board? Is it going to be percentage? And like everybody, you know, when you look at all of us, how are you doing? And it's tough stuff. But when you're a business, they're saying, well, we all got to suffer. Well, when you've got waiting lists that are long and people are really, really, really at risk, you know, how are you going to deal with that? But when you're not getting paid, DSC up till a couple, 3 months ago was owed $1.5 million from the state of Illinois. Hadn't been paid for 7 months. They paid about half of that and caught us up, and now there's no payments, and we're back to $1.5 million. So you have the operating and borrowing cost for doing that, and some organizations, and I've been working with some of the smaller organizations to assist them to get lines of credit, because if you don't have good business practices and lines of credits right. and showing the ability to pay that back and to show that you have a business plan that you will make the appropriate reductions to make sure you can do that, people won't lend you money either. And so DSC, we have a line of credit so we can get ourselves through that. But the interesting thing is the funders don't pay for that interest cost either. The state of Illinois doesn't allow that, so we're right. actually supporting that. So it's real important that we get our state back on track by whatever means that takes. But it has significant impact, not only from a cuts, but, you know, not getting paid.
Yeah. Can you talk, Lynn, you want to talk about maybe how, generally speaking, what the experiences of other kinds of organizations that get United Way funding?
Well, I think many of our organizations, and as Dale mentioned, some of them are really small, and I think, in fact, I think there are a few who did not have a line of credit. Some of them have had to dip into their lines of credit to make payroll. I hear stories about some organizations where people are working much more than they are being paid to work. Because the money is just not there. And hopefully this last go-around of some of the money coming from the state will assist. But, I think it's really important to think about, Dale mentioned, it's one thing to make cuts in businesses. You know, you're going to cut your advertising budget or you're going to... But when you start talking about people who are at risk, then where do you make those cuts? I mean, what happens, you know, what if we didn't have a crisis nursery? What happens if there's no place for you to bring a child? You know, the consequences of that are serious and frightening. And because these organizations are not-for-profit organizations, none of them had a wide margin. I mean, these people have been operating with cuts all along. So cutting even further becomes very difficult. I think donors expect that, you know, these organizations will run as efficiently as possible, if you will. But I think most donors have the perception that these agencies are doing just that. I think all of them do an awfully good job of showing what the return on the investment really is.
And sometimes it is, you know, it's not only cost savings, but where is it more better to serve a person, both in the community versus, for example, state institution right now, anywhere from $140,000 to $180,000 per year to put a person, whether it's MI or DD, that falls in that range. And you can serve – we don't want to say – but you can serve that person from anywhere from $20,000 to $70,000 in the community. You know, so 25% to 60% of the cost. There are a few people that really need more intense services, but for generally speaking, you can do that more cost effectively. Mm-hmm. Detoxification. My understanding is that we can do that locally. If a person needs detox for $220 at Prairie Center, and I think it's an average cost of $1,500 a day. Those are a day figure to do detox if you have to go to the hospital. When you don't have detoxification in the community, the emergency rooms get filled up. So all of the real, true other emergency needs we have really get set aside and becomes confusing if you don't have that capacity.
You know, I think it was yesterday's News Gazette front page story about gangs that are increasing in Champaign, Urbana. And as I'm reading that and having been in discussions lately with Andre Arrington, I'm thinking, you know, you have to believe that there are a lot of kids who will choose not to get involved with those gangs if they have another option, if they have another choice. So again, if those services are not available, if the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club doesn't have a teen night program, what are those young people going to do? And, you know, I think it's pretty fair to assume that some of them may make bad choices. So... Well, and I don't know how you quantify that in terms of dollars, but I think you certainly can assume that that dynamic is there.
Well, that's exactly – I mean, the RAND Corporation, which is a big nonprofit think tank, they're really calling for – I mean, this would be, you know, social science, the government, to really build some more consensus on what those shadow prices are for some of those social program outcomes, because we shouldn't leave it up to every small little organization to figure it out. Dale probably has access to some things that have been that there is consensus on. If for every dollar you spend, you're going to save X amount of dollars. We don't actually have that number established. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to compare across programs. Yeah, I think when you're looking at businesses, we have some standardized accounting procedures that help you analyze how to, you know, compare organization A to organization B. We don't have that understanding about cost-benefit analysis for nonprofits. Yeah. So it makes it much harder when you're talking about a community where you know the people, you know the organizations. But we're going to be having to make these decisions and discussions at higher levels, at the state level, at the national level. And there's going to be some difficult decisions made. So it would be, you know, they're encouraging that the science catches up so that we can indeed make the best decisions.
And to, just to be clear about a term that you used, it's a social science term, shadow price. Here, essentially what you're talking about is either hidden cost or hidden benefit.
Exactly.
Things that are not not right away apparent, but that it's that old thing about how, you know, either you spend it now or you spend it later.
Exactly.
And that, in fact, by investing some money now in certain kinds of programs like the Boys and the Girls Club, then maybe that means you will not have to spend money later on dealing with the kids once they get in trouble. So this is a way of saying, you know, you're trying to figure out what. Again, it's a cost, it's a benefit cost kind of.
Exactly. I mean, let's use the food bank because they actually have a market value for some of their things.
Yeah.
As Dale mentioned, for I think it's 18 cents that
13
cents cost them 13 cents that it would cost you a dollar to buy that same product of food. So you can really track that cost. But what you may not be able to get a figure on is they have a program called the Backpack Buddies program that gives children on Fridays, they take a backpack home full of food. They've been identified as being food insecure. So there isn't really a good value to that student showing up on a Monday morning not hungry, to having that student had nutrition available to them from when they leave school on Friday to when they come on Monday. That would be there's no shadow price for that. What is that price? It's harder to come up with that figure.
Yeah.
So most social service agencies deal with more in that kind of shadowy area of we don't really know what the dollar value is for the services that we provide entirely.
It's like
but they know that the teachers tell them that the kids are better able to pay attention and learn come Monday morning if they have not spent the weekend without enough food.
And that's, I mean, that's the kind of thing where you would say, well, of course. I mean,
of course there is.
So, you know, maybe you can't put a dollar figure on it, and maybe some people would like to be able to. And maybe that's just you say, well, you would like to be able to just make that argument right and say, well, I don't need to put a number on this for you now, do I? And you would hope he would say, well, no, okay, I get that. But I guess that maybe there are in some cases where it might actually help.
Actually, social sciences has the tools to develop some of those long-range costs and savings, but it's not going to be the executive director who's putting in 70 hours a week and isn't trained in this area. So that's where the RAND Corporation is calling for a more unified approach to establishing what those shadow prices are.
One thing I'm just curious about, and I'm going back to I'm interested in what's happening now, say, over the last 6, 8, 9 months, year, to generally to charitable contributions. Given I'm expecting that people are have less money so that they can give less and they are giving less. Is that true?
Well, we've seen a couple of things since September. We have seen there being employee cuts, staff cuts at businesses. And so, again, you know, we do a lot of workplace campaigns. Mm-hmm. And so we have seen the overall figure from certain companies go down. I have had individual donors say, well, you know, I'm not going to be able to do this year what I did last year. Our way of handling that at United Way, because quite frankly, the requests have gone up. I mentioned that we're in our next program funding cycle. We have requests for, I think, about $2.6 million. And we will not have $2.6 million to distribute. So the need is definitely up. And we're really trying to broaden our base and appeal to some people who perhaps we've not appealed to in the past. And we are also, I think, really with the materials that we use and speaking engagements and what have you, really trying to emphasize that now is really the time that those who are able to step up and do something. And I truly believe that there may be people out there who perhaps have not been donors, not just to United Way, but I mean across the board, who may be rethinking that because the media has helped us in some ways in terms of highlighting the greater need that's out there during these economic times.
One thing that I'd like to have you talk about, and this is something a little bit different. It may be more of a philosophical kind of conversation, but it makes me think about here we in this community, for example, we have a number of different organizations that do somewhat different things. Sometimes their mandates may overlap a little bit so that they're serving the same kind of people. But it seems that we have this very fragile web of nonprofit organizations trying to address the needs of what at the moment seems to be a growing population of people in need for various reasons. And it's a pretty shaky kind of system. They're all as individual organizations. They're going out there. They're trying to get what kind of grants they have. They're dealing with the state government. They're dealing with the federal government. They're dealing with the community. They're out there trying to – all these nonprofits out there trying to see if they can get individuals to make contributions. All facing the same kind of challenge, bigger problem, smaller resources. And I suppose some people would say, you know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Now, maybe that's just not possible that we could have something a little bit more comprehensive and with greater government involvement. How do you, I guess, what do you say to somebody who says, you know, this really doesn't make sense to have this very fragmented kind of system working the way it does, funded the way it does. It seems to me that there's so many holes there where somebody can fall through the proverbial net, you know?
I'll take a shot at that. The two things that I think that immediately come to mind that sort of hold the system a little bit together are the screening process. So those organizations, those 40-some programs that get funded by United Way are sort of pulled together in some evaluation there and priority setting. On the mental health, developmental disability, and alcohol and substance abuse side, there's the Champaign County Mental Health Board, which is the local planning, mandated planning unit for all those disabilities. And there's several organizations that also get funding from that, and they overlap also with United Way. So there is some planning and prioritizing there. I have to be real careful because we're looked at as a big guy sometimes. And so I don't always believe that bigger is better, but I think you're right, David. We need to look at efficiencies. Difficulties organizations have is sometimes giving up that individuality because they're afraid their mission's going to be lost. I firmly believe, I've talked with Lynn about this, that it doesn't have to be DSC, but there's some organizations that should naturally come together. I think it's a very good question for the donor and the taxpayer to ask, and we need to do that. You oftentimes find out that organizations aren't willing to do that unless they're in so deep a trouble, then it's too late. Or they think that they are the big guy and can take over the little guy. Mm-hmm. And that's not the way it should be, but there really is some shared things. As donors, I'd be really concerned, what's your management support cost? We're really, 20 in not-for-profits, 20% is an acceptable passion. We're very proud at DSC. Ours was 9.2 this past year. It's still a lot of money, but you need to work at that. So efficiencies, I think, are very important. But I think the systems, the best thing we have right now is local control. I don't believe that government from the state level bringing that down would be the way to do this. We would lose that. No two communities are the same.
And in fact, last fall when we had a hearing at Brookings about the state cuts, one of the great complaints by the agency directors was not just that they were cut, but that the state was prescribing what it was they were to cut. They weren't letting Prairie Center decide where they would make cuts. They were saying, you're going to cut this program. And I think that the folks who are on the front line dealing with clients every day would probably be very, very hesitant to let Springfield or Chicago make those kinds of decisions for them.
And I think one of the approaches, too, is to take a look at where's our community at need? Taking a look at children. So just as Lynn was saying, if we take youth and look at what are their needs and problems and concerns and challenges, who's meeting those challenges right now? Who's helping them? And then where are the holes? And I don't know what that body looks like. I don't know if that's fair to ask city government to look at that. And we have 2.5 if you count the university, which is really its own governing body as well. So who gets around the table and has that discussion about a certain population and how they're doing and how their needs are being met?
So that, I guess that's the kind of thing actually we even think about and talk about around here. Is there a role for media in trying to get a conversation like that going? Basically, a conversation that says, what are the needs of the community?
Right.
What do we say are the most pressing problems? And then how can we all work together to solve them?
Right.
So now that I'm sure that conversation takes place.
Oh, sure.
People do have that conversation when they get together and talk about what they're doing and talk about their problems. But so it sounds as if from what you're saying that there's no kind of central way of doing that or so far that hasn't really happened.
Well, I think it's happened to a certain extent. We hosted a community summit last year and had people from both cities, had people from RPC, had people from the school systems, and all of our agency directors and some agencies that we don't provide funding for, who all came together for a day and divided into groups. United Way has three what we call impact areas. So Success by Six programs for children 0 to 6, and we kind of put those folks together. The youth group and basic needs, which is shelters and food and mental health services. So we do try to provide opportunities for providers and logical others to come together. Dale and I worked with Peter Tracy last fall to have another event. But I think that really pulling all that information together and coming up with a community needs assessment, if you will, is probably a challenge and a project that we need to think about.
David, I think the thing that makes that very complicated is the positive thing of doing it the way it is now is there is a local community of all these not-for-profits that are identifying that need, and it may be a higher priority in some communities than others. But for example, the crisis nursery, what is there? There's only like five of them around the state. It's very, very few.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they get their money from state funding. The problem does go back to where does your money come from? Because you've got to match priorities to where you're getting resources. And if you don't have that good matchup, and that's where it becomes difficult. It's not just all of us getting together and talking, but the funding comes from very diverse sources.
We're just about, we have just about the point we have to finish. Any last thought that you'd like to leave with folks?
Well, probably last thought is the first one that I mentioned, and that is I think when you're talking about contribution to the community, you really have to think about what would our community look like and function like if these organizations were not providing the services that they provide.
Hmm. Brenda, anything?
We always tell people you can pay now or you can pay later. It's usually cheaper to pay now. So to help try and efficiently meet the needs as they are right now, we know that there'll be payoffs even if we can't put a hard dollar figure on those.
Yeah, all right. And you should expect that return on investment. You really should look at
Absolutely.
It as what is the return on my investment that I'm giving and expect that good quality service to be provided in the most efficient way.
All right. Our guest this morning, Dale Morrissey from the Developmental Services Center in Champaign. He's the Chief Executive Officer. Brenda Kester is Coordinator of the Family Resiliency Center at the U of I. And Lynn Jones is President and CEO of United Way of Champaign County. Thank you very much, all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.